your pithy, brief, and curving questions to you about factions, about prophecies, about Nightfall. We're not going to talk about future projects because they understand that we need to develop in a kind of a confidential state at this point. But I do know that we have a little tidbit of something that's coming up in the near future, and I believe that Mr. Johansson will be talking about that. So first I'd like to introduce everyone to everyone. I was going to do name tags, but I hate name tags because they're so unfashionable. So I didn't go that. This is James Finney. He's a lead designer. This is Eric Flannan. He's some kind of designer lead guy. I don't know what he does, but he's very smart and nice. This is Jeff Grubb, and he was responsible for writing a lot of the content for Nightfall, correct, Mr. Grubb?
The story, the continuity, the cinematics.
Yeah.
Everybody was sticking in with the mission.
Yeah.
There you go. Right, right. And then this is Isaiah Cartwright, and as you know, he's the person that does that skill stuff. I don't know whether that's something to do with stuff. No, I'm kidding. And then that's Colin, and he is also a designer, and his specialty is more on the line of events. And although he does jump in when, like, as Nightfall got ready, it was kind of like, okay, Colin, you know, pick up an oar and start, you know, moving boats. So these folks are here in order. We have John from Guild Wars Guru, Charlene from Guild Wars Vault. We have the two. Barocco,
yeah.
From he's from France, from MMORPGS.com. And then we have Holger, and he's from, I always want to say Online Welten, but
yeah, in Germany, everybody say two Online Welten, but the right name is Guild Wars Info.
Yes, Guild Wars Info. And he's from Germany, and then, Andrew, you know, Adam, you know, and then that's Nancy, and she is helping us with interpretation for Spanish, okay? Adam is helping with the French and German in case there's a word, because I warned them that you guys use words that I don't understand, and I sort of speak English. So I thought maybe just to help out. And then who's over there? Oh, that's David and that's Imano. They're both from Gogo Spano and from Spain, obviously. And then there's Bjorn and Izzy and I know him because he was at GC. Oh, you weren't at GC, were you?
Yes.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You were. But not the whole day you were. Yeah, I think you were working or something. Oh, anyway. So we met both of those guys in Germany and it was great. But Matthew, you didn't make it, did you? No, okay. And it was nice. And then that's it. So what the order of business would be is we'll start with John and just kind of go around the table here. And John will ask a question, and as I told them, their questions are free game if somebody wants to follow up. If somebody someone else says, well, what does that mean? And such and such, they're welcome to do that and kind of jump in. And the questions then are used by any of the sites if they want to make a report or a diary or they put up a Q&A, any format that they want to use. So, John, did you have some questions that you would like to start with?
I do. Let me start off with, I guess, some broader questions. What's kind of ArenaNet's vision for the relationship between PvE and PvP? It seems like, you know, there's quite a bit of friction out there in the community, and I don't think people really understand what exactly the goal is for the relationship, which if one is more important than the other, which I don't think it is. But you see a very vocal group out there, especially on the PvP side, when things aren't balanced the way they like, or when events aren't happening the way they like, or when changes aren't happening the way they like, seems to come out quite a bit. And it seems, this is a really long question, so I'm going to apologize first of all, but it seems that there's some vision for how people might progress through the game. So when you first start off, you might do some things in PvE and dabble a little bit in certain PvP specific things, and eventually maybe might end up in some ultimate place and be that GVG or HA or whatever. But that's just kind of my thinking. And what I would like to know is what ArenaNet's thinking is so that we can kind of see why the model of the game is how it is now.
Well, first thing I'd say is that for us, as on any game that you work on, is a little bit of a learning experience. And so sometimes the things that you go into something believing turn out not all to be true, and you have to adapt a little bit. But we start with an understanding that there's not a strict progression from, say, PvE to PvP. or certainly not vice versa. But rather that different players, different people like different things. And, you know, obviously we're not going to try to make 5 different games and all at the same time and try to make something that tries to be fun in completely unrelated ways where we're not able to focus what we're doing. But we look at ourselves as gamers. You know, one of the advantages we have at ArenaNet, one of the sort of, I think, core philosophy things about the company, is hiring gamers. And so we always have ourselves to look at in order to judge and measure whether or not what we're doing is right. Obviously, there's also an awful lot of looking at community feedback and things like that. But we can look at ourselves to determine, you know, what kinds of, what range of play we want to support. With questions of PvE and PvP, you know, there are people here who are much more interested in the PvP end of things, people here who are much more interested in the PvE end of things, people who cross over a lot. Certainly, we were hoping to create a game where people could enjoy the core mechanics of it, enjoy fighting in it, enjoy developing character, enjoy the strategy of setting up your character, and that fun would translate into both the PvE stuff we were doing and the PvP things. So we've definitely seen that in addition to the sort of stretch of players who do enjoy both, there are certainly strong camps of people who are really only interested in one aspect or another. And, you know, we look a lot at the feedback we're getting from players and are just trying to make decisions that'll provide all of these groups with the most fun experience. Yeah.
I think one of the big things that we learn as we go through is how to reward both sides in different ways and how to those rewards not hurt the other side. And so it's kind of something that we have been learning and, you know, trying to figure out since we came out with the game is how do we reward both sides for the things that, you know, how does a player go into our game, how do they have fun doing what they want to do, and how do they walk away feeling like they've accomplished something. And so as we always move forward, that's kind of some of the higher things that I feel we're looking at is how to people to feel like they're enjoying themselves, and while they're enjoying themselves, they walk away with something that they've gained. And so it's sort of, we try to balance both sides of the fence in order to be in different ways and have different rewards and different feels and have people that play both to be rewarded and, you know, equally on different sides. But it's, you know, that's kind of one of the core philosophies, I think, for the two is you go into the game, you play what you want to play, you have fun doing what you want to do, and you walk away rewarded. And so.
Yeah, my question wasn't so much the balance of the two, and I'll amplify it just to clarify. It was more, did you have envisioned a progression of how somebody might come in and go from one side to the other, or is it just you come in and just do whatever you want? So you never wanted to push, you don't want to have people eventually evolve to that they become more PvP oriented or the other. You just
the sort of thing where, like, do we view PvP as an end game or that sort of a question?
Right, I mean, because it's called Guild Wars, and so
I would
think that Guild battles would be a big thing.
I think the main thing is we view PvP as a very important part. We view both sides as being very important. I don't think we view as one or the other as being the end game, the thing that we expect everybody to do once they reach a certain point. I think we expect, I think kind of as Isaiah and James were saying, we expect that there are a lot of people who enjoy a lot of different things. And so one of the things behind the, I think that was the impetus behind the PvP character in general when we developed it, was that we didn't want people to think that they couldn't PvP until they, you know, had reached kind of the end of PvE and that people could PvP whenever they wanted to, sort of thing. We've been successful to varying degrees on accomplishing that, but,
And I think it progressively made that a better experience over time.
And naturally, we would want people that if they want to progress through the game and once they get to the end, you know, they should definitely have a lot of the tools and things that they want to go PvP. But I don't think it's necessarily something that, you know, it's not our ideal progression or ideal kind of
design. It wasn't the goal in the beginning. So, okay. That's
yeah.
I was curious about. Thanks.
Charlene? Would you like to wait a little bit? And say, okay, that's fine. How about you? Holger. I know you have some questions.
Where or how do you look for inspiration for the game? Will you play other products of industry, or even single player games for reference? Are maybe fantasy novels read as a possible source for ideas?
You know, again, going back to that, people, to get hired here, you have to be somebody who loves games. And certainly, as a general point, to continue to work in the game industry, because it can be very demanding, you have to be somebody who's really going to enjoy all the fun parts of it, and you're not going to do that unless you really love games. And people who love games play games. We've got, because of the number of people here, a very broad set of which things people are into. So certainly can't speak to what everybody on the team is into, but if it's out there, it's probably somebody here is into it. I certainly, myself, went through a steady progression of MMO addiction before coming to work at ArenaNet. But, yeah, I mean, console games, PC games, card games, board games, pen and paper role-playing games. You know, we do game nights here at the office, or, you know, people playing stuff online at lunch.
Romance novels.
And as far as novels and things like that go, you know, I think a lot of people here read. We've been passing around lots of, we tend to, you know, if somebody finds a book or a series that they really like, we loan it around and all that kind of thing. So, we're definitely, you can probably tell by many of the references in the game, we're very into all of those sorts of things.
Yeah, and just as you walk around the office, you'll see games on everyone's desk, and, you know, from every variety that you could ever imagine. I mean, someone plays almost every game I've ever seen here.
Yeah.
You know, even something I've never even heard of, half the people will play, just surprised, right? I mean, there's a very wide variety of games, and we pull inspiration, I think, from everything, right? And just as designers, as, you know, when we are looking at things, and artists looking at games, and programmers looking at things, you play as many things as you can, you look at everything as many ways as you can, and you really, you know, analyze how you are going to do it, and what you're going to do, and how they do, you know, what did they do that you really liked, what did they do that you needed to learn from, and just, you know, there's a very open understanding of, you know, what you can learn from. You don't kind of, oh, we're not going to play that or anything. It's just, you want to play everything, you want to look at everything, every game, every card game, every board game, every computer game you can come across.
That does make the gaming experience kind of interesting whenever we get together and play games, because you'll play and then we'll analyze.
Yeah.
So it's, I always talk about playing with game design, and games with game designers is like driving with mechanics.
Yeah.
Because, gee, that sounds like you got a flutter in the engine. Pull over here. Oh, let's take a look at this. Oh, my God, look at this mechanic. It doesn't work. Why is it encouraging that behavior? So that's the sort of thing we see a lot of when we're playing games.
On the Guild Wars Vault, a lot of the writers, readers, whatever you want to call them, they always pick out things that you guys do that are similar to other games, and you just explain why. So that would be good information to pass off to them.
A lot of game design is a conversation. Basically, somebody puts something up there as a mechanic or a concept, and someone responds to it. And so it says they build on it. They grow with it. They continue to develop as they go forward. I like that. I enjoyed it. It gave me a good experience. I want to carry that forward.
So you
grow it.
Yeah. You certainly can't, don't want to design in a vacuum. You have to be a student of game design in general. And there are lessons to be learned even from games that are a fairly different medium or genre.
I'm sorry, just wanted to request that you guys
could
read some of these elders. Okay.
Thank you. And interesting about other games, I can tell you that when certain games are released, at lunch the office is empty because everybody's out at EB Games or buying games.
Release day.
I'm in the morning scene where my office is. I sit near the door and I hear the rustle of bags for like an hour as they make their pilgrimage back to the office. And ooh, you got the collector's edition. Well, I didn't want to spend the extra money, but you know. So it's really quite exciting to see the interest. And I like to call it, Jeff, I like what you said, I like to call it let's put on a show from those really, really old movies, like my mother's generation movie where I think it was Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland, and they'd get together and they'd put on a show, you know, to save the poor farm or whatever was going on. And it seems like that happens a lot here, and I really, really love that. We had a meeting in October, well, it was probably August or September, about the first Halloween event. Do you remember that meeting?
Yeah.
That was amazing. It was like they didn't realize, the people who had sent the invitation had no idea that, like, that it was going to attract so many people. And it's like, if you'd like to discuss the first Halloween event that we're planning, meet in the conference room. It was packed. Daniel looked around and said, we've never had this attendance at any meeting in our lives. And here we all are here talking about pumpkin heads and special transmogrifier potions and stuff like that. But from that synergy, from that interest in other games, and then from building that synergy, I just love watching these guys work because it's just, they just like, you know, oh, we could do this. Oh, we could do that too. Neat. How about David or Emmanuel? Do you have any questions? Would you like to wait a bit? Or?
Wait.
Wait? Okay.
Wait.
How about you, Bjorn?
Okay. I don't know if this is the right English, but which way does a new chapter have to go from the first idea to release, and how much time does it normally take?
Good question.
It's difficult. So we have two examples that we can draw from, basically, which would be Factions and Nightfall, which sort of had very different curves because of the fact that just in with Factions, it was the first one that we had ever done. And so it was sort of a big learning process through a lot of it of, you know, there were a lot of things that we needed to work out for it, like how exactly do we do a new campaign, you know, how do we get players from, you know, Lion's Archer from level 20, you know, what is the right level to bring a character from a previous campaign? Do we add new professions? You know, what scope are we going for? So there were a lot of questions that we had to answer for Factions that we didn't have to answer for Nightfall, which is probably one of the reasons I think why Nightfall was a lot more polished and kind of the way it was as opposed to Factions, is because we had roughly the same amount of time for both of them, but we had a lot of our questions for Nightfall answered by Factions and by a lot of the things that we, you know, tried to do in Factions and that, you know, worked or didn't work to different extents. It was kind of our first chance to go back and say, okay, what didn't we like about the first game? How can we improve things? And to try different things. And so so to answer that question, they're very different. But where we usually start with them is just an overall theme. I think one of the first things we picked for all of them was kind of the land we wanted to go to.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was very much for Factions, it was, you know, let's go to Kantha. Let's go to Alona for Nightfall. And so everything kind of starts from there because we'll pick a land and then our artists will start working on, you know, just concepts inspired by kind of, hey, this land is going to be Asian in theme, this land is going to be North African in theme. They start doing concepts, and then a lot of what we do kind of works off of that too, because we'll see something that one of our concept artists draw and it's really cool, and we'll, you know, try to get, like the Jade Sea, for example, I think in Factions is a good example of that. Daniel wanted to do, there was no, you know, magically frozen Jade Sea in the original concepts, but when Daniel kind of went and concepted that stuff out, we knew we had to have it because it was so cool looking, you know.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. I don't know if that answers part of it. If you have any more.
The other big thing we do is we just look at what we are not completely satisfied with in the game so far, and, you know, what are the big things that if we were able to spend a little time working on technology or, you know, introduce some new thing to the game, what's going to have the biggest impact and make the game much better than it is right now? And then trying to pick ones that synergize together into a whole is a big part of that initial process, and then trying to make that fit with setting and story and, you know, what we actually have time to do. And somewhere in there, at the heart of what the campaign is going to be.
Yeah, one thing, too, is we always have lots of ideas that we save or that we weren't able to do, you know, on when we first made the, you know, Guild Wars, and, you know, we'd save those, oh, we really want to do this, we really want to add, you know, these, we really want to do these, and then we have to save them and, you know, do them when we have the time, because we're like, well, we, you know, it's not going to synergize with all the other parts of this campaign, so we really need to make sure that we spend the right amount of time and make sure it synergizes with everything. Like,
yeah, I think anybody who plays the game, you know, has their list of, wish they could do this and this and this and this, right? And it's not different here. We've got those lists, and, you know, we just maintain the list, and it's sort of decide which ones we actually can afford to put people on right now.
Our list is pretty similar to the players' list, just
yeah,
all the time. It doesn't differ that much.
Which reminds me of something that I thought would be fun and very quick before we go to another round of questions for the designers is, can you tell us in very briefly what number one thing you think players would like to see in the future? Like, pick one thing. I'm just intrigued because you represent so many different types of player bases and so many different communities. Any ideas? Because I know when I visit in the game, I get consistently certain requests. And so I'm like, wow, you know, that's such a popular request. But you read the forums every day. You're in there moderating. What are the things that you see that players are asking for?
The ability to jump.
Okay, jumping. That's interesting. Yeah, I've seen that too. Can you repeat that?
The ability to jump in the game, like off a cliff or something. They like to know why we can't do that.
Matthew, you look like you have to.
Auction house.
Yeah.
Auction house. In storage. Storage is a big problem.
Increased storage, yeah.
So if we only let you jump off cliffs but nothing else, would that be okay?
That's not my question. Somebody I saw on my forum asking that.
Don't worry, the jumping auction house.
Put a lot of storage behind it, right?
I have a big list. I'll let everybody else.
Okay. How about folder or?
So once the character is built, could start changing attributes, you know, like the hair color, the hair color,
yeah,
or
yeah,
the design of the continuum, etc.
Yeah.
Okay. That's very good. What about folder?
Yeah, I think came the print out and changing your character and the main question.
I think the best thing you all do is the template. Saving the template.
Mm-hmm. The what?
The templates.
Template.
Ah, yes.
Saving them and loading them up is elite, in my opinion, because that saves me a lot when I do PvP. Instead of making, you know, rerolling characters all the time, mm-hmm, you just make one for each one, which I have like 12.
Mm-hmm.
But you have one for each profession, and all you do is just keep changing it out. So cool. I love you guys for that. That was great. Thank you.
Were you kind of surprised as a fan? I know that I was, because I call myself fan number one because I love these guys so much. And I'm like, I'm so lucky to be here because I love, you know, being able to see this. Were you surprised at some of the things that were incorporated into Nightfall? Because I know I was. I was like, we're doing that? Wow, that's great.
The heroes was a big surprise.
Yeah. And they're going over very well, aren't they?
They're way better than the Henchies, by the way.
Yeah, we know.
You know, you got to love Orion with his late firefly, you know, firestorm and meteors. It's like, hey, Orion, they're all dead.
Yeah.
I call him my cremation expert because he takes care of the bodies after I've already killed them. Dior, did you have anything from your community
There was something the last time, but just have to say before, it doesn't fit in my opinion, but a lot of people, mostly PvP players, think that they want more like Uber Imba skills, own something, group, get a map, something like, and because the balance update, a lot of PvPers were running around, so, you nerfed my skills, I can't farm anymore,
Yeah,
and
I hear that a lot, too.
Oh, I'm so glad you
they
brought that up.
They just the idea to do more PvE only skills, like in Lightfall, the Sunspearer skills and some, who aren't affected in PvP and they aren't, and they haven't to mess up their build again. I think that's a better balance update or something.
Basically, it would be great to have more things like that. Definitely. You know, we don't want PvE to be completely mindless, but so sometimes there are skills that we have to look at that make farming maybe too easy, things like that. But we definitely do pay attention to people's comments about was it Gladiators? That's I think the big one this past weekend. And
Shield of Glory.
So we factor that in on balance changes.
I have something that I've wondered about, and I think James, I would like you to share, because it's so hard to explain when people do mention, I can't farm anymore, and things are so expensive, and I need to farm. And James is a student of game economies, and I would love you to give us because they start going into designer speak, and I'm like, huh, but he can really capture that for you.
Not to put me on the spot or anything.
No,
right. It's pretty simple, because a lot of prices in the game are driven by what people are able to pay, right? All the traders, the prices on those are based on demand for the items versus supply of them. If you have people introducing too much gold into the economy too quickly, it causes inflation. It's pretty simple. And what we don't want to do is have a situation where anyone who's playing normally, anyone who doesn't want to buy gold on eBay, which I think we also say is not allowed. We don't want a situation where those people feel like they can't ever get anything cool in the game because the prices of everything have been driven up because of the rapid gold intake farming. So, you know, we certainly recognize that there is some fun to be had farming things and trying to find an efficient build for killing monsters and bringing in gold. But what we try to do is make sure that's still an interesting activity and make sure that it doesn't completely unbalance the rest of the economy. And also, anytime we nerf farming stuff, which certainly we have at times in the past, you know, we have the players here who are into farming, you know, test it, like, can you still run this build? Can you still, you know, how effective is it? What's your income like now? And, you know, we don't, I know that there are, for example, 55 farmers out there who feel like we hate them.
Yeah.
And that we're always trying to destroy their ability to do anything. And the thing is, it would not take very many skill changes for us just to remove that from the game. And we say that's okay to make that character in school, that people come up with inventive ways to hunt things. And so, you know, we have never taken the simple steps that it would take to make that character not valid, and don't intend to.
I mean, the thing that we look at when we're trying to change those stuff is, you know, we're okay with people doing it, but it's the overall efficiency. Like, if it's something that it's so easy to do that it's just mindless and you can just continually do it over and over, then, you know, we always trying to tweak that first. We want it to be skilled in how to accomplish it. So, you know, we do like to try to nerf the extremely mindless versions before we
do. Is that also addressing in part the problem with bots? That if you have something that's just so bottable that you would need to attend to that and try to get some more of the human element back into that process?
Yeah, it definitely, the less simple it is, the harder it is to bot. But, I mean, when we look at a problem, it's more someone,
most things can be botted.
Yeah, someone's always going to bot the thing, but you just kind of raise the bar about who can, you know, write the programs or to bot things. So that is one of the things when it's harder to accomplish, when not everyone can just run and make a bot that's really easy to run, then you reduce the number of bots.
Okay.
And just on that note, there's a concern in a lot of the forums, probably the ones that I don't read or can't read because of my language shortcomings, as well, certainly in the English language forum, about botting and about why arena netlists have happened. And we actively have people dealing with this daily. I think that's something that I would really love for you to tell your visitors to the site, that we, it's not a matter of if it's reported, we might look at it. I mean, you see the forum post, I see the forum post, I sometimes respond to them sneakily in fact. But it's kind of like, oh, they're not doing anything about it, and I saw this thing, and I reported it, and it didn't happen. Bots proliferate quickly. And a botting program comes out, and there might be a lot of them in there. We can get rid of them, and then that gets tweaked a little bit, and we are daily pursuing them. We have people assigned to that, not just reports. We are actively, proactively and actively dealing with bots.
And one of the big things with bots is a lot of people think it's really simple just to remove them, but it's very difficult to fix problems with bots and remove bots without affecting all the people who don't bot. Right, it's and so, you know, and that's really more important to us, that we don't ruin the game or the experience or the fun that people are having that are not botting, right? And so, you know, and we do recognize that a lot of people do like to farm, and so it's difficult because you have to find ways to limit bots and without just destroying a lot of people's ability to play the game. So.
Yeah, and I think that's actually been working. If you look at the eBay price of gold, it seems like it has gone up over time. I mean, this time last year. But I think a related issue that you all haven't touched on is, like, when you have the Chinese farmers, or who, I don't know where they're from, you know, people that are
professional farmers
that can get away, you know, they can get around a lot of these things, learn the very simple, you know, techniques to do stuff, and that's definitely an issue. I guess one of the things I would ask in terms of economics is, why not to go to something less fungible than gold for driving the economy, so that you can bot a lot of gold, but it doesn't do you a lot of good because people don't value it as much as items that are dropping, crafting materials, whatever, and make that something, because of the interactions you have to have in order to convert that to something useful, a more complicated, these professional farmers have a more difficult time because they have to have more player interaction,
right,
and issues like that.
Yeah, I think that would come... bring up some questions of making it more of a hassle for casual players too.
Right.
I mean, the reason we use gold is specifically because of the fungibility, right? We want players to have an easy time interacting, trading with each other, all those sorts of things.
But if you put an auction house, you say it does both of those. So.
We're not opposed to an auction house.
I have questions too. Let's ask that one.
Can I say my one request too before we go on? Because we.
Well, John, it's your turn.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just making. It seems like we're just kind of moving on to something else. So.
Definitely, I'm ready.
Okay. So all the same things that they mentioned were high on our folks list.
Yeah.
And the other one, because I'm more maybe PvP oriented, is that people are interested in getting PvP skin unlocks with faction, and I know that's been mentioned before on various places, and the things that have been suggested is that, you know, it might devalue what PvEers get, but what if you had some PvP specific stuff, so it wasn't, you know, it was different, and maybe it was equal in coolness, but not overly cool compared to what you would get with 15K, whatever, just so you get a little bit more diversity on the PvP side, especially as the game gets more mature. And it's hard for people who want to have a cool-looking PvP player to go through every single chapter to get these things to come in late. So that was a popular question.
We're definitely well aware of that.
Yeah, I know you were, but I want to get it on record.
Good.
That's all.
Did you have a question on your list that you'd like to ask as far as...
I think
we've gone around the table, so it's your turn for a new question.
Well, I have a... I mean, if somebody else... has thought of one. I mean, because I can keep going forever, so I'll
take
one more.
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, how about a couple of maybe short answer ones? I don't know. Just because people will kill me if I don't ask. Why did you switch HA to 6v6?
That made a lot of people upset.
There was a lot of... internal discussion about it, and a lot of alpha test discussion about it, and a lot of feeling that it would be fun and that our tests with it showed it to be fun. Certainly there's a strong movement toward moving back to 8v8 right now, and we're definitely talking about that.
The big thing when we first really started pushing around, you know, the ideas of doing a lot of things every weekend and, you know, keeping the game really exciting every weekend was the thing that we can try things out. We can play around with things and we can see how they affect stuff. And, you know, one of those was, let's see what the effect of the party, of dropping the party size in HA. And one of the main goals of that is we recognize that it is very difficult to get 8 people together in our game. And we think it's one of the very large limiting factors to our PvP is getting, you know, 8 people together all at the same time that are learning, you know, an equal skill level is very difficult. And very few other games have that high of a group size. And so one of the concepts when we first played around with 6v6 for HA was, here's an area in the game where you can go and you can play. And, it, you know, just number-wise, it becomes a very simple progression where you got arenas that are 4v4, and then you have an in-between one, which was looking at halls, and then you have an 8v8 one, which is GBG. So that was kind of our major reason for trying it out in the first place and playing it, was to make it easier for people to go into. And, you know, it's very difficult to look at every possibility and every situation that's going to come up in that. And so that's the kind of the point of putting it in, playing with it. Getting the feedback, when we put it in, we were extremely surprised about how there was just an overall amount of people that just loved it and they wanted to stay in the game. And so, you know, we looked at it and we didn't see that there was any large problems with it at the time, so we put it in the game. And, you know, we're definitely seeing the community opinion on that shift in different ways, and, you know, we're analyzing that and looking at that. And we've also seen the metagame and the play and the way it works in HA changing because 6v6 versus 8v8. So we're learning a lot from it, and we'll, you know, make the decision on where it goes from there. But, you know, the reason that we went to 6v6 is we're just trying it out, looking for new things, and wanting it to be easier for people to play.
See, that gets back to my original question, if there was indeed a set progression. And you're saying that there's not necessarily, but the ease of getting players together fits
right.
That progression.
It's an accommodation.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
There is, to some degree, a progression just within PvP, certainly.
That, I mean, that's the way we do it.
We would expect you to start with
yeah.
PvP, right?
Yeah.
But,
one thing I'll say from a community standpoint is unhappy people tend to be louder.
Yeah.
So when 66 was originally put in and then it was taken out after the weekend, people were like, we want that back, bring it back. So they were more inclined to go to the forums and get it first. And then now that it's in, the people who want it back to AB are more inclined to then get on the forums. And they say, you know, people don't normally make posts saying everything's okay, we're happy. But they will say we're unhappy. So it's just a change of what they have right now as opposed to what they want.
Well, can I ask a follow-up question? Because that is something that I've mentioned on the forums as well. And the big argument right now for 8v8 is that it's being 6v6 has driven away all the HA players. Okay? Can you tell me what the numbers are in terms of percentage of players, so not absolute numbers, that play HA now relative to when it was 8v8? Has there been a trend up, a trend down? Stay the same?
I don't think we really talk too much about numbers. I mean, you guys are free to, but I think we've always kind of had we don't talk about numbers too much in percentages, but
it's
not what we want.
That's the argument, and if there's a way to squash it, it would be tell people what the reality is.
So, well, I mean, one thing is, without using numbers that everyone doesn't have access to, you can just kind of see by the number of districts, right, which
yeah.
is mainly the way the players analyze
yeah.
how well something's doing. I think it's interesting. I think if you look at just the number of districts and the number of people, a lot of the groups that were very strong 8v8 before in halls, they move into play in a GBG a lot more now because of it. And, you know, the number of districts is lower in different areas than others. And so I do think that we have shifted some of the larger groups around. You know, I definitely talked to a lot of the groups that were hardcore into Heroes of Sin. And, you know, they find themselves playing GBG a lot more, and they miss it. And that's, you know, I think they're represent a lot of the vocal crowd that really wanted to go back to APA. So I do think that is one thing that we're, you know, we look at a lot and we talk to, you know, we try to really kind of put roots into those groups that we see are really radical in the direction and game types that they play, so that we can, when we do things to them, we can really get their feedback, because they, you know, someone who puts 24/7 into one particular game type usually has a very distinct opinion that we want to listen to. And so I think an overall trend that we've seen is it did some really good things for us. Like, I think a lot of teams got to play HVH before that didn't with when it was APA, to the point where it was almost too much when we had, you know, that you could bring in three heroes and three henchmen. Like, we had a large amount of people that could play then, because it was really easy to just grab two people and jump in and go play with henchmen. But, you know, we saw the negative impacts of that, and we tried to limit that. And so I think, you know, the 6v6 was successful in that route, in that a lot of people got to play it that couldn't play it before, and we probably got a lot of people interested in it. We definitely saw numbers jumps when we did the shift. When, you know, like, when we did the weekend where we tested all this stuff this weekend, you know, we had tons of districts of people. I mean, there was lots of people playing it. So I think whenever we change it and improve it and play around with it, we draw in more people. And so, but it is there's a difference between the number of people and the higher level players and where they're going. So we try to watch both of those. And I do think, as just from the community feedback, you can see that a lot of higher level players have, you know, they prefer the HP8, and they're playing in GBG because of it, and a lot more people are playing Heroes of Ascent because of the 6v6. So.
Well, you see, there's a correlation, though, with the higher-level players, in that they're, most of them are also old-school players,
yeah.
And so they're from the old holding bills, and so one of the things that I think is happening with the game, this is not a question, it's more of a comment, is that you're seeing, you know, as the game matures, you're seeing kind of a turnover of players. And so now, you know, the old vocal majority or old vocal experts, you know, from the one APA. You know, they're really interested in that. But you also see folks cropping up on our forums, at least, and a couple other places that I go, that are saying, you know what, I don't have a problem with the 6v6 because I can get in there and play. Mm-hmm. And you're not seeing people holding for 2 days or whatever, you know, things like that, which
like
I don't know.
Sigil still?
Well, like a lot of folks. So it seems to me there's a lot of things that are interrelated in terms of this whole argument, and I can appreciate why ArenaNet is taking a stance to take a look at it, even in the face of a lot of, you know, respected players saying this is awful and we're going to quit the game if you all don't change it. So.
And I wonder, too, if some of the feedback that we see is predicated on a single concept, that suddenly if we just change back to 8v8, everything will be better. Or if we just leave it at 66, everything will be perfect. I think that it's sometimes difficult for people to misunderstand or not comprehend the interlacing of everything. And I think that the interconnectivity between the skill balances and the mechanics and the changes and the numeric party size, I think all of that has such an elegant dance that the more I work here, the more I am amazed at how complicated it is to design a game. I am absolutely staggered at looking at that, and I said to James one time, I said, I respected James because he was involved in StarCraft, and I think StarCraft is like a wonderful game, and I think Eric, you were on that team, weren't you? Yeah, and it's like, I mean, this is like the godly game, but I had no idea until I started like looking at the list and saying, you have to look at number 42 for that profession with that secondary, and look at that guy over there, skill number 390, with that secondary and that weapon, and figure out if it's going to be overpowered. Figure out if it's going to work. Figure out if it's going to be fun. And that's the most important thing, of course. It's a very incredibly complex system, and I think people have a simplistic answer. Just change it back to 9v4, I don't know, whatever,
well,
and it'll all be better.
What's an interesting point, if you think about this, if we had never had APA,
I know you were thinking about that 9v4.
If we had never had APA, would people be making the same arguments that 6v6 lacks diversity, lacks holding ability, lacks fun? Because what you don't see right now is there's nobody asking for 10v10 or 12v12,
right.
And if you want diversity of builds, if you want holding, those would do it even more.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of it is based on, I think, just this general human nature that, you know, this is something we were comfortable with that was taken away. And even if, you know, something I mentioned to Gail, even if it was never intended by the devs, and this is another reason why I ask vision questions, you know, did you all ever intend for people to hold Hall of Heroes for days on end? Or was it supposed to be something that was a constantly changing thing to get the name up in lights? And so that, because, you know, favors was a big deal. And if one country or one group, you know, caused favor to be in one place all the time, I mean, that kind of ruins the experience for a lot of other players. And
that's a good question.
And so I really think the mechanic, as it originally was designed, wasn't functioning, but you all had other important things to do. Okay, and so it didn't get addressed. It seemed to be working fine. People adapted to it. They had fun. We'll leave it as it is. Now, maybe the mechanic is getting back to more what as it was designed to be. I don't know because I don't have the vision for that, but it would be good to know. But players, because, you know, they're used to the old way, say, well, that is the way it's supposed to be because that's the way it's always been.
That's a great thing.
You know?
Yeah, it's something we're certainly very aware of in general. Anytime you change things that people are comfortable with, you use that word, and that's really the key word. People are comfortable with something and change it, there's going to be some degree of outcry. I will say, though, with regard to 6v6 in Heroes Ascend, that with the old, or I guess it's currently in mind again, right, holding mechanic, 6v6, there probably is something fundamentally flawed there because you don't get as much build diversity in 6v6 and you know,
right.
So I think that is a problem.
Dying,
but whether or not it's addressed by, I'm sorry, whether or not it has to be addressed by going 8v8 or whether some of these other changes we're making take care of that. And then even if we fix it, whether or not 8v8 is better than 6v6, all these things are things we're still working out.
You know, another thing that comes with that, too, is there's a lot of requests to fix it now, do it immediately. You guys could go fix this tonight. Why don't you? And I think what Gail said, too, about how intricate all the changes are and how they affect so many different parts of the game, because anything we do in PvP is also going to affect PvE, we really can't just jump and change something overnight and throw it in. I think this test weekend that we did the other weekend is indicative of what we're going to try to do, which is give everyone a chance to really see what it's like. Give us a chance to see, you know, get all the players playing it, compile all the feedback, and see what works before we make a change. We're not going to just throw something in anymore. And I think what we're trying to do is let's not just put a Band-Aid on Heroes Ascent. Let's get it right for good so we never have to do anything else in there again. And it's going to take a little while. It has taken a little while. But when we do get it right and when we do get everything in that we want to do soon here, I think it'll be better in the long run for the game than just throwing in, you know, Band-Aid on top of Band-Aid, and in the end, it's not anything what anyone wants, you know.
Do you have plans of changing it back to 8v8?
It's not part of that. They said already.
It's under discussion. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was my short question. So.
What do you think about the sealed deck play mode? To reflect the real player skills and not the builds that.
So I play it quite a bit. I know there's a couple groups of a few peers that get together and do it often, it's interesting to see how that kind of thing rolls into our game and what's the fun that we can pull out of that. And I think it has a lot of cool things that it does for a game, just like, you know, how Magic used it. And I really like a lot of the aspects of it, but it's interesting to see how we can how that would integrate with the rest of our game. And I think one of the big things that we're always really looking at is just, you know, we don't want to fragment our player base, and we want to keep things really cohesive. And so we really try to keep that in mind when we're working on things. So we're definitely, we play it and we look at it and we understand it, but
and we think it's cool.
And we think it's cool. And so it's of the decision of, you know, what are we going to do moving forward looking at that? And so we try not to, you know, we try to support it. That's why we, you know, post up some rules that we played and came up with, and, you know, post up the card systems and, you know, made some rankings and things like that. But so it's something that we enjoy, but we just haven't fully supported in game yet, I guess.
I don't recall what we announced so far about, like, upcoming on the PvP horizon.
Yes, we've talked about
So we're going to have a 1v1 ladder.
Yeah.
And we talked about, you guys tell me, what have we talked about?
We'll just start saying stuff and you'll know that we couldn't have said it.
But again, may I just ask you guys to speak in English?
Sure.
Okay. Okay. Just that we get started with a console and then it goes from here to...
Right. I think we have announced that we are working on some sort of automated tournament.
Yes, we have and an automated tournament.
We haven't given tons of details on it. And I'm pretty sure we've announced that we're going to try to do a 1v1 ladder.
Yes.
And things like that. So that is what is
I think a lot of the changes that we're making will enable us to do a lot more cool stuff without fragmenting the player base.
Yeah.
Will be a better starting point for us to have fun with PvP stuff going on.
The way I understand the automated ladder, Mike Gills wrote an article about it that's on the website, and it's going to be one of those things where it starts every short period of time, and you can get points that go towards weeklies, and then the weeklies go towards monthlies, and there's going to be ways to get possibly our championship would be affected by the different mechanics of the automated tournament. Very, very possible.
Just some of the major goals of the system is... we recognize when we run the tournaments that we can't make them as big as we want them to be and let as many players partake in them as we can because it's just a time factor or a number of people that we can do it. And so by making them automated, we can allow everyone in the game, whoever wants to play in that type of game, to go be able to play it. And so that is what the whole system and what we're trying to do. And the details of that we haven't fully announced, and all the pieces and little things are still being pushed together and things, and we'll unveil those as we can. So.
No timeline? So it's not going to happen next week as suggested?
We will definitely.
Friday.
Friday, okay.
We don't have a hard, fast deadline on that. There are so many things that are being looked at and considered, and you always have to look towards the priority list and all that. This is definitely a very important component of what we want to offer the players.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of folks, when that was announced, now I'm out of turn, so is that okay?
It's okay, go ahead.
So a lot of folks, when that was announced, were really, a lot of information people were talking about, how it's going to work and everything, getting excited. And I think, as I mentioned to Gail last night, I think a lot of people who were on the edge from saying, am I going to stick with Guild Wars or am I going to go to that evil WoW game instead? We're kind of waiting on news for that. And one of the things I'll just say is the sooner the better to get, even if it's not going to happen, but to get some more details out there so that people feel like it's still going to go. Because, a month in Guild Wars time is a lifetime. It's amazing, when somebody wants something and you don't respond in 2 days, it's like, oh, wow, I guess you obviously don't care.
Oh,
and
I get that emailed every day.
Oh, yeah. And so to go a whole month and, now going on 2 months from when it was announced and not have anything, it's not a catastrophic thing, but I think it's just, the people that are the naysayers are just pounding in more nails on the coffin.
It's something we recognize to the point where we probably say it's brought up every day when we are looking and trying to talk about it. And we do realize that getting more information out about that is extremely important, and we'll probably see some sort of bits of information probably pretty soon about where and what, and it's what we're trying to show.
Yeah, I'm looking at the article of daily automated tournaments, and there was a glitch, not a glitch, but something that people were concerned about. They didn't understand, well, why do I have to be in a guild for 30 days to be able to participate in this? But they really do. We really do need to, in order to make it meaningful to give a recognition and to have them accrue these points, they can't be guild-based. They can't be, as like I was saying something I posted the other day, they can't change guild as often as those people change their socks. I mean, they really need to have a little bit more consistency because the rewards will be significant enough that, predicated on things like championships and major prizage, as they say, major prize rewards. So it's important that is a message that you can take, that we didn't just cavalierly come up with, 30 days, no problem. We do appreciate that a month in Guild Wars.
Yeah, I think the the complaints about that have kind of died down as the information has kind of died down with that. And I think the big thing that people don't understand is if you were to participate in these other big tournaments that we had, there was always a 30-day rule. And so this is kind of analogous to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think once the rules come out again and that's explained, I think, you know, people aren't going to be happy, but I think promoting guild stability in Guild Wars is probably a good thing, just seeing the nature of things right now. So.
And the other thing, too, is a lot of those little things are small details that as we get closer and closer to releasing,
right, and that's been
analyzed
as well.
Clearly we don't have tons of the details, and the only one that you really get, they're going to talk about a lot. So.
Yeah.
There was some concern, I remember, in the community about the tournament ladder reset. Did you get any concern about why is the ladder going to be consistent and not end with each season? That was not a major issue with the community. That's good. I saw some posts about, well, the tournament should be predicated on the ladder, and the ladder should shut down and we'll restart it. But I think a historical ladder is extremely exciting. I love that idea that you've got that longevity. Frankly, I don't know whether the designers have thought about, or tournament or whoever does this, you know, the whole issue of decay, if somebody gets way ahead and then they never play, and I don't know, is that something that we've, you know, I don't think that's a factor of it. It's just how well have you done over the historical period of time? I think that's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we mainly are just pulling from the ELO system that everyone's used, and we recognize that when we wipe an ELO system constantly, we don't use an ELO system properly, and we have problems with that. So we wanted to go to a historical, constantly up ELO system so that people's rating is what their skill level is, which is the whole point of a ELO system.
Yeah, again, I think a lot of discussion came out when that first happened, and the people understand how it works. And actually, the ladder farming that people thought this would eliminate still happened anyway with certain guilds. And I think, once the tournaments come out, then questions will happen again. So what are the key values going to be there? What is going to be the cost to losing then? So if you spent all this time to farm and all of a sudden a loss just, you know, costs you weeks of work,
mm-hmm.
Then it, you know, may have some other issues as well. But yeah, I don't think people are thinking along those lines anymore, other than this notion of there's a lot of guilds that haven't seen a lot of value to playing on the ladder now, except for a little bit of practice, and you see some of the top 20 guilds now just starting to get back into it again. But until the tournament,
have a season going,
yeah,
right?
until the tournaments come out, these people have real lives, they have important things to be doing. They're just managing their time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think more will come up once they see how the two systems work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my uneducated take on it. So. And you should ask other people because
yes.
I'm talking too much.
Why have you removed the skills from quest rewards?
That's a great question.
Because I don't find the PvE that exciting, and I prefer PvP, and my personal objective was to get some skills in order to have a perfect PvE character in order to play GBG.
Right.
Well, right now it's impossible to PvP player to have a perfect PvE character. It's too expensive, too long, and clearly I stopped playing PvE because I have no more objective.
Well, the...
As a quick reward was a great idea.
Right. This is actually something that gets brought up periodically, and it's something that we know that there was some downside to moving away from it. A lot of what we were trying to do was give players more flexibility in what they have. You look at the rewards that you get from the quest now, and they actually, in terms of the amount of experience and the amount of gold they give you, equate fairly closely to, not on a single quest, but to being able to get new skills. And so what we were doing was, you've got to go to the skill trainer, but you're able to still get skills out of doing the quests far faster than, just out of killing monsters. But you're able to choose which skills you get. That said, we definitely see that there's a visceral reaction there's a strong emotional reaction to seeing that when you finish this quest, you're going to get this skill and a greater sense of reward. And so, it's definitely a lesson learned.
I kind of like it the way it is now, myself. You know, because if you get, you know, the master's level, you get extra skill points, and
yeah.
It's just like a surprise. You've gone through and you're doing something else, and all of a sudden I have 10 skill points that I didn't know I had.
Yeah, that's one of those issues where if we were to change it back, I think we'd see a lot of people posting that they want it back the way we had it, sort of thing. I think there's the thing James was talking about where it gives you more flexibility, so you're not it's not dictated to you that if you're an Ellie, your skills are Flare, Firestorm, you have these five skills as an Ellie. And one of the things that we saw that we wanted to try to encourage, one of the reasons why we changed it, was we wanted to make it so that Ellies weren't necessarily all, you know, hey, I'm a fire Ellie because I was given six fire skills sort of thing. And we wanted to give people more choices you go to a skill trainer and you kind of are able to see, because he's got, you know, so many skills for your class that you can see, oh, an Ellie can do this and can do this. And, oh, what's a ward? Look at, there's a ward, right? Like, that's the sort of thing we wanted to encourage. Whether or not we, completely accomplish that, as James is saying, is another thing. I think there are certainly ways that you could, revise a system so that it wasn't as abstract, like the sort of things where James was talking about. We give you sort of the resources you need to get skills by doing quests, but you know, there's probably somewhere in between those two things and dictating you.
Yeah, when I say it's a lesson learned,
yeah.
It's something where we wouldn't just shift back to what we had in prophecies, but if we were to change it again, I think we can get the best elements out of both systems.
Yeah.
And I think we know what those things are.
Yeah, we want to give people the satisfaction of getting something cool from a quest, as well as giving people the flexibility to choose their builds and not have kind of their build dictated to them by this series of quests.
One of the interesting downsides that came out of back when we had skills come directly off of a quest is it was nice for PvP players, but for a lot of PvE players what ended up happening is they would all get to the end of the game and they were all using the exact same build for their class. And one of the great things about Guild Wars and what we try to teach is you change your build based on what area you're going into to fight against it. And so people were getting into parts of the game where they had to change their build. They didn't really know they had to do that, and they're using the same build all the way through, and they ended up dying a whole bunch. And so it wasn't really necessarily teaching what we wanted to teach from Guild Wars. And like they said, there's a middle ground somewhere there. But.
Other beta updates for all the campaigns planned. Could you imagine release an update in the scale of Soulfinders as an update which is paid for, so that the older campaigns can be updated?
Well, we can imagine it. Whether or not we do it, I don't think we can really talk about anything that we're going to do other than things we've already announced or the stuff we've already planned to show you guys today. So I don't know that we can really speak to that issue. It's certainly an interesting one.
So, Holger, you're thinking that there would be, just so I understand, you're thinking that there would be an interest in purchasable like expanded content, like a Star Wars Furnace kind of.
I know that many players wish for updates for the older campaigns. There are some players, there are only prophecies, and every time there is an event for some special chapter, they say, oh, and I have only prophecies, and I doesn't like factions, but I want some more content there. And I know that many people like the Soul Furnace, and they like the new elite areas. And I think that they wish new parts in the older chapters. And I think about this, and I think, oh, it can be a thing about price, or you have to make every new or more chapter for hold Guild Wars alive. And I think about it, something to put in for older chapters new content, and I think it's a possible thing to buy the Soul Furnace, you
buy it for $10 and something right. like that. And I think some players, or I think many players would do this and take them, or it's not necessary for them, but when they want to go to prophecies and find a new reason and a new region, and they, I think they could do this and buy some new small area for this. For
her last chapter. That's interesting. That's great. Thank you for sharing that. That's one of the things. We get a lot of questions about the in-game store, and could we do this without a thing in the in-game store? I would love to see us help.
That's something like the region for gods, the underworld,
right.
And the filter, and there are some different gods, and they have no
own
region,
yeah.
And I think something like that is
yeah.
Many people want to see the area of Melandro or of
yeah.
Duena, and
mm-hmm.
I think for this this is something where many people or many user hope for. They go to the temple, and of course I'm looking around. And now there is something everybody waiting for this.
Yeah.
Every new update they go hit and look up the new the new area for the new bazaar, nothing.
As far as I know, there was also a big petition, I don't know if it's the right word, to bring back the catacombs from the tutorial, prophecy tutorial, into prophecies.
Mm-hmm.
At least on Guru, there was a great thread about it.
Yeah, I've seen it, though. You're right, yeah. That's great. That's valuable information for us to have and consider, and these guys, you know, kind of ruminate and cogitate all those 8 words. Any questions, David? Okay. Yes. Okay. That's great. You have written questions. That's great. Sorry about the volume. We're trying to crank it up here, and I'm doing yeah, big table. The seats are on the table.
Do we want to? Oh, no. Okay.
If anybody wants to be going in the meantime. I was thinking maybe this would be a good time for us to talk about the super special thing that I told you we could talk about. Colin, does that sound like okay with you?
Sure.
And James, yeah. You got students from you to talk about this super special thing. Okay, now, you are the first people outside of the internet to know this valuable information.
And Colin saw the email this morning about me. Yeah.
I have not opened my email yet, no.
Oh.
You can use Canva and say Lunar.
Okay.
Not publicly. Yeah.
Okay. So, we have something that, Colin, take it away. What
sure.
do we have planned for events?
All right, so we're in the midst of making a new event right now. It's the Cantha New Year. Thinking of along the lines of the New Year that's celebrated in China around mid-February.
So faction people are going to be happy now.
They will,
despite our best efforts. Yeah. In the beginning of the event,
that is
really
one question
that
a lot of people ask is
yeah.
why we have all these events for Ascalon and Lion's Arch and nothing for.
Yeah. To be fair, we did have Tengu Day and the
yeah.
Dragon
well, that's
Festival.
That's what I tell them.
Yeah.
I said we did have Dragon,
yeah.
You know, the Dragon Festival, and we had the bird people there, and they're like, but why they're not included in Christmas and stuff?
Well, we do move around, but Colin, tell us about this.
So the new one is...
Just to mention, one is the New Year celebration based on the Chinese tradition, and the other one was there.
Oh, we were speaking of previous events we had in this land
but
of Canva.
This is the
new one.
New.
Yeah.
Never done it
I'm
before.
I'm excited about that. That's cool. Chinese New Year in Canva.
Yeah. And it will be celebrated outside of Kanta, but the basis of it is in Kanta. Most of the festival will take place there, and we're adding a whole lot for this one. We're doing a bunch of stuff we've done for previous festivals, where we'll have all kinds of quests you can play, new characters you can interact with, a bunch of new prizes and everything. And something that you're going to get to play later today that we're adding for it is a new racing game. That's racing the little beetles that are in Nightfall, the rain beetles. We built a roller beetle racing track, and we'll let you guys get kind of a first look at that. It's still a little rough look right now, but you'll get kind of the warm up for it beforehand.
Roller beetle racing, you gotta love it.
Talk about the prizes for roller beetle racing.
Rain. Is it rain
beetle
racing?
Roller beetle.
So one of the things we're going to do for this festival, prize-wise, for the racing that we've never really done before, is we're going to have, like the challenge missions, we're going to have a high score record for the event weekend. And at the end of the event, the people who have the high scores for finishing the race, probably the fastest 50 people, something along those lines, we're going to give all of them a special prize. And it'll be a little mini pet of one of the racing beetles.
Yeah.
Can I not be hacked on that one?
special appearance. We will detail yet to.
Cool.
Wow.
Mini.
That's actually
mini
about just 50 of these mini pets. That is a pretty rare thing. So.
They're going to give me one in advance, though, so I can go into town and take 7 people at a time into a mission and show them that, because they want me to show it. I'm only kidding. I'm angling here.
That'd be sweet if you did.
Guys, come on, I'll show you. Come on. So it'll be the first time that we've had a reward of this kind for an in-game, an event-related fun thing. And the fun thing itself is new, and the festival is new, so that's a whole lot of exclusive information that we haven't shared outside that you're welcome to share with your community.
I'd like to know whose idea was it to bring the flamingos in.
Flamingos to
the
to camp to Elona?
Yeah, well, you know, they're the pet, the first pet you run across when you get into Nightfall. I was just wondering whose idea it was.
I review what we do in terms of pets, and we have a set of designers who are especially focused on creatures. But to start with, we give the artist a certain amount of freedom when it comes to creating pets. And the artist who actually does most of the pets thought it would be fun to make a flamingo. So she did that.
Oh yeah, that's crazy. Oh yeah, I love flamingos. That was one of the first pets I got when I went into Nightfall. But then as I got into Dissolution, I changed to a hyena.
Yeah,
she's awesome.
And one of the things in general, you know, we try to do is have just a sense of fun here when we're working on things. So a lot of times things we do are just for extras. The black moa.
He's cool too. I got him.
That was not something we requested originally. It was just actually the same artist.
It was supposed to be not known.
Yeah.
And then you guys brought him into the game.
We
and it was like, so cool.
Hey, I made this thing this weekend. Yeah.
We have a
question
actually regarding the pet.
Okay.
And it's what do you call it? Does that additional information you can give about making pets more controllable for Beatmaster Ranger?
Yeah, we are working on it. But as with many other things, I don't know if I can't suggest when it's going to happen, but we're working on it.
But it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Is there a way that you guys, I don't know if you would do it, but for, say, people like me who kind of like that pet idea, for our heroes, pets change their name?
I don't know that we're going to be able to do that. In that general list of things we'd like to do, there are maybe some more questions with that one. I know it doesn't sound very tricky, but that one I'm not so sure we'd be able to do.
What about different PvP pets? That was a question that came up.
I think that would fit into our general, you know, sort of skins, visual rewards for PvP, and definitely we would not want to overlook that.
something fun with the black moa too. I don't know if you've seen this, but there's the pet tamer that stands outside of the Sunspear Sanctuary. If you have a black moa and you come up to him, he screams and runs away.
Really? Yeah. I gotta try that out. I gotta see that.
Like four short questions. I think they're
correct.
One is, will RealWorld ever have an expanded in-game option and sale system for player to player?
We would like for that to happen. We actually have people working on it. Again, I can't say when it's going to happen.
Okay, but it's also on the way.
But it's, yeah.
It's on the way. Okay.
It's
being worked on.
But, okay.
But that one might, you know, don't imply it's going to happen in the next month. It won't.
It's okay, but as long as there's hope, you know.
Yeah.
The other one is, which is my personal question. Any plans to introduce other playable ethnic groups? Races? I like ethnic groups better than races, the word, but other...
We don't have any plans to change what you can play in the existing campaign, right? And, you know, with later other releases, right, we might do new things. Certainly with factions we introduced, kind of new range of ethnicity. With Nightfall, we also did that. And so nothing that we've announced or said we were going to do would include that.
I'm just out of curiosity. Pardon me. Do you do a market study for these of what are successful characters in terms of physical attributes, or you just go with creation?
Well, certainly we have to have some conversations about that, but mainly we just try to do things we think are cool.
Mm-hmm. Which are sometimes quite different, you know, quite unexpected. Northern Africa is a very, except for Egypt, is very uncharted territory. And when we announced Northern Africa, people were quickly thinking, give me an atlas, what is that? I mean, truly, people don't, not all people, of course, but some people were, well, what would that be? And then when they saw screenshots and they saw the concept art, they said, oh, I get it, okay, cool, you know, that's neat. But it's nice to have that variety. It's nice to be able to go into the game if you have all three campaigns and like, ah, I feel like going to the jungle today, or I feel like going to the desert today, and have those varieties. So fun. I have a question about heroes, and I stepped out for a moment. I just wanted to know. It's often asked about the ability to, did this come up, to rename heroes and the ability to replace the hero pet. Rename hero pets and replace them.
No plans for either of those.
No plans for either. Okay. Just had to ask because it comes up a lot.
Yeah, I get it a lot on the vault about that question, about the renaming the pets.
Yeah. Okay. See something over the notes here?
So if you stop and you talk to that guy, he's got a whole set of lore about the moas and everything.
Yeah, I've heard him talking about it, but I never really understood why he's talking about it. But I have to take my assassin. Over because she's the one that has the black moa.
Another question.
And I'll see what you talk about. That's cool.
Is that by the spirit?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
great. Yeah.
That's so
do you
funny.
Want to do
right
now, or should we do more questions?
Let's see. Well, we'll be breaking in about 17 minutes to get together for lunch.
It's it's just a silly personal question, but
sure. Okay. Yeah.
Out of all you sitting here, out of all three campaigns, which one would you recommend a first-time Guild Wars player?
Well, I would say Nightfall.
Yeah.
I think we learned a lot about introducing players to concepts, and I think Nightfall in general has a lot of things going for it. I think it's the best campaign out of the three that we've done, in my mind.
Because like on the vault, we get new people every day.
Sure.
And they're always asking for another good question about the trials.
Yeah.
A lot of people asking for that. We try, you know, I got a few in my email that I've been passing out, but a lot of people are wondering about that, and when they do try out the games, that's their main question. Which campaign should I start with? Can I play without having all three? It's like, will I understand the storyline if I went with Nightfalls and not the other two? But, you know,
yeah.
And we definitely tried to design it so that you could just get Nightfall and use that as your starting point.
I might be the odd duck here, but I probably would recommend Prophecy. But I'll have to talk to the designers and have them persuade me what I should.
Well, in my opinion, I would start with Prophecies because that's the beginning of all it, even though the other two do tie into it. But without Prophecies, you won't really understand a storyline unless...
Because
the other two kind of...
You might not get all the references.
Tie into it, because like with Nightfalls, you have Shero in there. And a lot of people didn't understand how he fit into Nightfall because he's part of factions.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. I would start from the very beginning and work my way up. If you like the game enough to play it, add the other two eventually. But, you know, that's what, I was just wondering what your opinions would be on which one to start with if you were first-time player.
The nice part about Nightfall over Prophecies is if... you don't really have anyone to play with and you're a new player, you have the heroes available to you to get started with. And I think it's probably a better way to start the game and learn the game by not only doing your skills, but setting up your heroes, learning all the different aspects of the game for three or four or five different classes that way. Story-wise, though, you know, it may make more sense to start from Prophecies. I think for the sake of learning the game and the core mechanics, people are probably better off.
We get a lot of people coming from, what is it, Dark Ages of Camelot? And we got people from WoW that come over, and that's always their first question.
Sure.
I want to try Guild Wars, but now you have three, you have the original and two expansions. Where do I begin?
Colin, you make a really, really good point, because the heroes make the game so accessible.
I would also say the pacing in Nightfall is probably the easiest of the three to learn the game from, just because it's paced better.
A lot more people doing Nightfall as well, so there's
that's the other thing.
I mean, if you were to go to Prophecies now, you'd see all these empty districts, and that's a little depressing.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And congrats on the millions. I saw that one article on your webpage, and that was the first thing I had to throw on is on the newsie for Guild for the Vault. So that was one of the first things I had to throw on that day. I skipped all the other articles and put that one first.
I think the Game of the Year, that most recent
Game of the Year, that is a huge
coup.
I just got an email. We actually have scored a couple more.
That's the kind of thing that, you know, like we were talking last night, to jump in there and try to get some big PR in the mainstream against WoW. I mean, that's, you know, because so many people just know WoW and they don't know Guild Wars, yet here's all these critical claims saying that Guild Wars is a better game. You need to start piquing folks to say, well, how come I'm not considering that instead of this WoW that all my neighbors are playing?
When I read that article, MMORPG, whatever it was, said that, yes, you know, World of Warcraft is right up there. But because they came in late with their new expansion they just came out with, which probably would have put them over the top, which, not in my opinion, but I just got a big chuckle out of that when they said, because of that, they came in second. And I was like, ha!
Here's the latest news that I can share with you.
I just thought that was so cool.
AOL has Guild Wars Nightfall, the 2006 best MMO expansion. I hate that word, expansion, but we're happy for the recognition. So this Game Daily / AOL, Guild Wars Nightfall, 2006 best MMO. And then GameSpy, Guild Wars Nightfall, 2006 MMORPG of the year.
That's pretty damn good.
Considering
a lot of people don't consider Guild Wars as an MMORPG. They just, you know, consider it as a role-playing game, but not as same classification as the other games. So that, I think that is a big accomplishment. You guys are doing great, and just keep up the good work.
Despite the occasional thread that pops up that says Guild Wars is dying or everything
is
doomed, it's the opposite. It's continuing to grow.
People just don't understand the game, that's all.
And that is something that we don't talk about numbers, but Colin is right. We
see the numbers, and you know, we're just humble, modest people that don't like to brag about our numbers, you know. But the fact is, we can see who's playing and when they're playing and where they're playing and all that and what they're playing. And Guild Wars is doing very, very well, and it's growing, and that's a very cool thing.
If you became your own competitor by bringing out, like, say, Guild Wars 2, how would you react to that?
As the competitor or as us?
Either way. Either way.
As us.
How would we react to that? Huh?
You know, I think our reaction to everything that comes out, whether it's competitive or just something we've seen recently, like it, just ask ourselves how we make Guild Wars better.
What can I learn from that?
We just would have to look at what these upstarts did to make this other game, and you know, ask ourselves if they've made better choices than we've made, and how we can evolve Guild Wars to be better. And you know, I look forward, especially to when we do these live events. They're always an excuse for me to try to sneak some stuff into the schedule.
Oh, I love the events.
That's just
so cool.
General improvement into the game. And we keep doing it. You know, those of us here working on it love Guild Wars, and you know, both as a game to play and a project to work on. And I mean, we just had a chance to, you know, working on games where you put it on the disc and you never get to touch it again except for the occasional patch, it's just so cool to be working on a game where you get to keep making it better. That's our focus. And that would be a focus if somebody else came out with something that was really close to being competitive.
I like the events too, Charlene. And I think they mean so much to the community. I mean, from my point of view, you know, bringing all these people together, people who, I mean, they'll say, I haven't played for a couple months. One of the, I think, I'm not misspeaking, James, but let me know. I think one of the thoughts with Guild Wars was that without a monthly fee, if you wanted to go and try out another game, you know, you still got your account, you're welcome to come back. When a new game comes out, you can join us again. Maybe you didn't play Factions for the full period of time. Maybe you played it for a few months, and then you come back with Nightfall. So that's been our intent. And then it's just the events. There's just no way to verbalize how much they mean to our community and the people that come back and the way that this team works their bottoms off to get those things out. And I mean, you see people here in the middle of the night, and they're giving their. I mean, I need to say they're all passionate. Yeah, it's true.
The guys over here.
It's true. You see them giving so much on a daily basis, and then this is just like an opportunity to give on top of giving. It's an incredible experience, and then going into the game. I mean, I sat there, the first Halloween event we had, the event ended, and the server, I believe that everyone left, but I sat in there at the end of the Halloween event all by myself in Lion's Arch on a hill with tears in my eyes, because I loved that event so much, and I still do. Crazy about everything we do, but those, it's so important that we do that and that we have that. And then these guys are always surprising. They don't just put on a show. They put on a show and put a bow on the ducks or whatever. You know, yeah. It's just always more.
Is there any way possible that little redhead girl will be back?
Oh,
what little redhead
girl?
Gwen.
Brown-haired girl. Mm. All I know is
our little fire started there. At the end of that one event that was so close.
Scarecrow.
He's jumping around.
All sorts of frogs are different. Where he says, he said one day when we were speaking in the game together, that he could not help but think there was some significance to an item that had been recently found, but he could not put his finger, don't ask me, the frogs have fingers, but he could not put his finger on quite what that significance might be. So this is just a theory of one ambient creature who lives in Ilona and Kanta and Tyria. But it's interesting to say that, you know, his theory has never been disputed by anyone. So I don't know.
Aside from the what the frog might say, but the rest of us have to say no comment.
Oh. Oh. Sorry, people who like the little fire star.
The little fire star.
Yeah. That's what I call it. She's an evil little cuss.
Just during that one event.
That was that was one of those really surprising parts. And you're doing what with who? Where? And then the worms jumping up and eating you. That was cool. At the end of that. Event. So I think what we'll do now is we'll let these guys probably need to go back, check email, get jackets, whatever. We're going to meet in the lobby at about 10 to 12. It's now 40 after. We'll meet about 50 after in the main lobby outside of Lisa's office, you know, the open lobby. And if you guys can drive, some of you can drive, that would be really super. I can take three in mine. And Andrew is driving, I think, Natasha.
Where are we going?
We're going to T.F. Chang's,
okay.
And I did not order ahead, but I figured we'll just kind of go, and we have two tables of 10 each, so let's split up and throw around, and then we'll just order and kind of share around the table, you know, because if you order one thing, it's okay, but T.F. Chang's is cool. They just get a little nibble of, like, eight different dishes.
Can I ask one more question before we go?
Sure.
And it can be a short answer, but it has to be. Skill balance, is that coming?
Is a skill balance coming?
Yeah, I'm when? Not the yeah. We know what it is.
Okay.
Oh, you do know.
And if I don't ask, you know, they're going to say, oh, I'm being too soft on you.
Yeah. We haven't announced when we're going to do it.
We have, in an informal sense, we have announced that we would be looking at it. Go ahead.
It's
okay.
Okay.
So.
Right.
We did this test.
We did the test. We got
when are they
feedback
coming actually in?
Yeah.
Fairly soon.
Okay.
Mike, you have a question.
Can we just say the name?
Yeah, you
okay.
Can
say
the name. Loud, yeah. Oh, we're not talking loud.
Okay.
Can you and I, the skill balancing, is this for...
No, balancing.
So
balancing.
We tested
balancing, yeah.
Okay. We tested the last weekend, and our plan is to put it in February, the weekend of February 2nd.
Okay.
And kind of do testing again, and then if everything goes well, just...
And that'll be, we'll treat that as a follow-up test weekend,
okay.
Which means we'll be very willing still to reevaluate and make changes. Okay. You know, we're making some revisions based on...
So that was actually another question, how the test weekend went, if you would be
right.
Doing more. So that
yeah. And so what we felt like was, it was really useful for us, and we learned a lot from it, but that to really make the changes permanent, hey, we really ought to do this one more time. And so... Did the test weekend. We're giving ourselves a little bit of time to discuss and evaluate what we learned from it and to implement changes and then also to look more extensively, especially at PVE impact and some of the things.
And can I suggest
yeah.
HA doing that again, that maybe the testing the 8 version?
Well,
that would make people happy?
Well, certainly.
Okay. I'm just going to say I suggested
that.
That
yeah. Might not
yeah.
Come all the
time. That's
not really no, I know. I'm just going to say I suggested it.
Right.
Know.
So
I'm making myself look good here to
right.
These folks.
So then,
I'm going to complain if I don't say this stuff.
We have this follow-up weekend where we push the changes live, and we treat it as a test weekend in the sense that we're still very much evaluating all the changes, and we'll see what feedback we get and be willing to roll something back. But at the end of the weekend, we will not roll back the changes. Except for if specific issues came up and we decided to remove something or alter something.
Okay.
So it'll be kind of premiere of the changes on live
okay.
/
Super Bowl weekend, yeah.
So it's testing weekend number 2 is what we're calling it. We'll announce it at noon on Tuesday in the game and on our customary news
sure.
Post.
Okay.
And but James's point, just so you understand, the second one won't be in and then out. It'll stay
right.
And be modified and adjusted as they...
Right, done the tweak, see, okay, divert, yeah, okay, we need to change that, maybe do something.
Sure.
By the end of the weekend, do the tweaks, and it should be good to go. So people can now anticipate, if we build a build based on this, we can go forward and not have to worry about waiting and seeing. And
then, okay, I don't know, if are we able to put up what the changes are going to be earlier than the build? It seems like we... have a strong enough idea.
Yeah, it comes out of translation.
Okay.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So you'll do it again, like on the Tuesday announcement, you might put it up as well?
Well, we'll also see what
okay,
the
change. So I know you're in GWP talking about and getting feedback, so people have some sense on what some of the things are coming.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Cool.
I have a question for you. So, besides the skill balancing, did you make other chances to be your assistant?
Yeah.
Yes.
And they're wondering if those chances are going to stay.
We're happy with some of them. I think one of the types we're not happy with, we're making some more changes. And that same weekend that we put the skill changes live again, we'll put the Heroes Ascent changes live again with some revisions.
Yeah. With some revisions?
Yeah, based on what we saw on the first weekend.
Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you know, I have another 200 questions, but I don't think we'll get to them.
Yeah, sorry.
Well,
we'll be on the next 5 minutes.
I know. It's okay.
So, taking kind of a break, Andrew, you can escort anyone who needs to use the door because we've got the little key cards that they need to go and use the...
Yeah, I need to use the door.
Yeah, use the door.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, then you guys meet back here, and the designers will just meet you out in the main lobby in about 10 to 12. That's 5 to 5 to 1.
Take one card up there.
Oh, sure, if you'd like to. Yeah.